with Mr. Mays and
Ms. Maddox.
Yes.
We are with Kansas State University, and we are currently at Ms. Maddox's house. And it is September 17th, 2009, and we're going to do an interview for the oral history class project.
You first, why don't you tell us your names and your birthdays, if you don't mind.
Okay.
And
my name is Clara Maddox, and my birthday is May 12th, 1926.
And tell everybody who you are.
Okay. My name is Albert Eugene Mays. So I'm a senior now. It used to be Albert Eugene Mays. Got married. And I was born in October 15, 1929.
Okay. Could you tell us a little bit about growing up, about your parents, what they did when you were growing up?
Well, we were raised by single parents. Our mother died when we were very small. He was 16 months and I was 4 years old. So we was raised by our father with four other siblings. They had, one sister was the oldest, and the rest of us came along under her. So she was our mother.
And you grew up
at age 12. Yeah, we grew up in Marietta.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What area of Marietta?
Right over here on this section.
At that time they called it library.
That's this section that I was telling you about, library. We grew up over here.
Yeah, over here.
Over on Black Street.
We were born on the west side, I think.
Told them about Louisville.
But she don't have that on tape.
No, but she didn't read nothing. She not going to have any of this.
She might have used some of that before the time. Since she said she's taking that tape. But we might forget some things.
Do you remember your address? Or where the house, what street the house was on?
It was on Black Street.
Mm-hmm.
But I forget the address in the old place. We stayed on two places on Black Street. We went down the street, and then later on, I think in 1947.
We moved to 210.
We moved to 210. I remember it was 210 Black Street.
But where we first moved to was right, you know, where Washington Avenue crosses the fairground.
Mm-hmm.
We lived right there at that intersection across from the Baptist store.
Mm-hmm.
That's where my daddy moved after my mother passed from Louisville. He moved there.
Okay.
Then later on, we moved up on the corner of Black Street and
Lawrence. Lawrence Street on the corner. There.
210 Black.
And that house is still there now.
Yeah, that house is still there.
That house is I guess about 100 years old. It got to be about 100.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, what were the different areas that you mentioned, the different black neighborhoods in Marietta that you mentioned in your...
Oh, you want those names?
Well, just tell us what you remember, a little bit about them and the names.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, I don't remember too much about the Louisville area because we were leaving from that section when we were very small. But we grew up over here in Library. But there was, like I say, it was Harlingtown. People just walked everywhere they went because we didn't have any cars. Everybody had to walk. So they would walk from Harlingtown to come to Marietta Square, and they would do everything around the square. You paid your bills and bought your groceries, and everything you had to do was around downtown square in Marietta. And we used to love to look at the fish. They still have those fish in the park there. We used to love to walk and see them. And look, they had swings in the park. They had swings and things, but we just could walk through. It was segregated, so we weren't allowed to, you know, just see them. You just walk through and look.
You could walk through there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think later on they allowed you to sit down. I think you could. They had no benches where you could sit, but most of the time, like some of the black then you could come through there, but you
didn't play with them. And then there was the stores around town, McClellan's, and
well, they had the grocery stores too.
Yeah, right? I told them about the grocery stores.
Well, you didn't tell them on this area to take it there. You said you got cold. I heard you say not to take it. Okay, take me there. You said you didn't want it on.
Well, some things that you have, I didn't want to read the whole paper. But anyway, there was the McClellan's, and they had, you know,
what is it?
drugstore thing, yeah. But you just went in there and bought. You can sit, you know, like, yeah. Like the lunch stands and say, we can sit, you just go in there and buy what you want and come out.
Okay.
And it went all around town, that's the way it was.
It wasn't totally off limits, it was come in and do your business and then...
Yeah, you couldn't intermingle or sit and be served.
Okay.
You just did that. And then over here at Johnsville, those people used to, but they had that before the plant started, before Lockheed got there. Those people used to walk from Jonesville, and they still had to walk to town. But after the plant got started there, they had to move from Jonesville, and they moved in different sections of town. Most of the people, a lot of them moved over here in Library, and that's when the plant was started over there.
But the plant, it wasn't Lockheed at first. It was Bill Bummer.
Yeah.
Bill Bummer plant. And then after Bill Bummer plant, then it was, they had another business in there. Forget the name of it now. Then Lockheed came in 19. I guess they got started in 19, around 1950, I imagine. So they started hiring people in 1951. But they actually, probably, I think they actually came here about 19, latter part of 1950.
Were there any black-owned businesses on the square at that time?
Yeah.
They had a little section, what you call, this was Lawrence Street, right off the square. Yeah, that was Lawrence Street, and that's where the black business was, right off the square down there. They had the cafes and the pool hall, and they had the Undertaker there, too.
I told you all about that. You remember, I read it to you.
And all that was, they had that little section there. Right off the square in the town. And then they had some business on a different part of the town, like on the south side of the north side of the west side, they had a little business where the black deal at that day, a restaurant and thing like that.
Yeah, downtown, we had right on Law Street, like I told you, there was the barber shop, Chapel's Church, Hanley's Funeral Home, Marietta Cafe, and it was the doctor's office there upstairs. And we had the pool room. Remember the pool room that was used to be up there? And Fowler's place right there. Where all of that was right on Lawrence Street. Right across from the, right up there as you're getting ready to go to the square. It was right there in the area.
Can you tell us some about the school you went to?
The school. Oh, yeah. The Lemon Street School. It was Lemon Street when I went.
Oh, you did.
We
graduated on the purpose.
But I know that's what I'm talking about. At first it was Lemon Street. She's talking about the old history of the school.
Okay.
It was Lemon Street School.
And they renamed it Lemon Street.
And then they renamed it.
Okay, it was Lemon Street.
Then when I first started school, it was Lemon Street when I first started school. And then I graduated in the 11th grade. So between that time, it was renamed after a doctor, Dr. Perkinson. And I graduated on the Perkinson High School.
Why did you graduate in 11th grade?
Because that's as far as the high school went.
Oh, okay.
So it was to the 11th grade. And Mr. M.J. Woods was the first principal there at the school. So, the elementary school was right across the street. And as I told you, every Friday morning, both schools would come together and have chapel in the chapel. We would have, sometimes we would have plays, and sometimes we would have, just devotion, singing, poems, everything like that. And the principal would give remarks after the service. Then everybody would go back to the different classes.
And then you did have prayer service. You did have a little prayer service there too, you know, when you prayed, you know, prayer. At that time, because I know now they take the prayer and the thing out of the school.
We had devotion in the school rooms every day.
Mm-hmm.
All the rooms had devotion before we started the lessons, and we would still sing and have prayer and pledge allegiance to the flag and everything like that.
What year did you graduate?
45.
45?
I read it at 47.
47?
Now we, I guess when you get to Zion, I would take, but when we also, we went to school. I know I did. I don't know what you did or not, but I mean, we went to school at Zion for a while because they were building the new high school.
Yeah, well, I had to go to school.
And we had to go to school in the old church, Zion Church there. That's where mm-hmm. we went to school.
In the old brick chapel?
In the old brick chapel, mm-hmm. yeah.
When I was in the fifth grade, we went to the old church mm-hmm. school. I thought they were building the new high school then, and we went there for a while. Mm-hmm.
How many students were in?
In the whole school or just in our class?
Well, how did they handle the different classes going into the chapel? What did you,
No, we didn't have the chapel. We went to school in the little old church that the first church mm-hmm. that the slaves built.
Right.
We went to school there. Well, it wasn't that many. It was at the fifth grade, I guess.
If I'm not mistaken, I think that you did it by time, you know, everybody didn't go
right.
at the same time, you mm-hmm. know, different time. We went, you know, different hours in the that you went.
Like part of you in the morning and part in the afternoon?
Yeah, different hours. Even in the morning time, I think it was.
I don't remember that. I remember going to school because Miss Usher was my teacher. And we stayed there until mm-hmm. school was out. I think they went to different places. The students, I think they had different places to go. Different churches, but we went to Zion Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. And Miss Usher, that was after the fifth grade.
Well, Miss Water was my teacher name. Miss Water was my teacher. Mm-hmm.
And we stayed the whole, you know, school day until then.
So you've always been members of Zion? And
yes. Uh-huh.
Was your father also?
Yes, yes. My dad was a deacon there.
He was a treasurer of the church for years. So.
Mm-hmm. And a deacon.
And a deacon, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So has your family always been from this area, or how far back do you know?
My dad moved from Wilkes County, Washington, right. Georgia, uh-huh. here. Uh-huh. But then we've never left. But my brothers and my sister lived the other place, because my brothers was in service, uh-huh. and my sister lived in Virginia for a while after she got grown.
Uh-huh. But her and I was born here.
Yeah, we were born here.
Other siblings, they was born down in Wilkes County, Washington, Georgia.
Did your schoolmates also go to Zion?
My schoolmates?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Not all of them, but some.
Your friends?
Yes, yeah, some of them, yeah.
What was the other church, Turner Chapel, or what were the other black churches in town?
Cole Street. They had one they called Cole, C-O-L-E.
Okay.
Right down the street from our church now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I understand that Cole Street, I believe, they said that it came out of Zion. Like Zion came out of the first Baptist church.
Right.
And then we had a little church at Marietta Chapel. It was over in Louisville at that time.
Yeah, it was in Louisville.
And then it was a congregational church down there on
Off the square.
And what else? Other church that was? Well, it was Pine Street.
Yeah, Pine Street, though. I think they came late on. And Mount Zion, they came a little late on, too.
Yeah, Mount Sinai. Because they came from the Jonesville area when they started the plant over there. That's where they came from.
Going back to Lemon Street, were there any athletic teams? Did you guys play on sports?
We didn't, but we had a basketball team.
And a football. And, they had football, too.
And early, before I graduated, earlier they had a football team, but then they didn't have one when I graduated. It was just a basketball team.
And I know we used to play with volleyball, too, in recess time, we played volleyball.
Did they play against other schools?
Yeah, the basketball team, they went to different places. We had a good basketball team.
They're good?
Yeah. That's when our principal was telling them that, you know, it doesn't matter whether you win or lose when they left, but just how well you played the game. If you played the game well, whether you won or not, you know, you still did well.
Mm-hmm. What did your father do for work?
He was a farmer before he moved here. And then he got a job at the Farmer's Chair Company. Mm-hmm. So he was there, he worked there, and afterwards, later on, when the Brahmins shut down, my daddy, when Lockheed came, he got on out there and worked. I think he worked out there for about 5 years before he passed.
Mm-hmm.
He worked out
there. He worked there at 51.
Well, he worked out there about 4 years before he passed.
Dr. Zion, have you held any positions at Zion? I know, Mr. Ray, you've been a deacon.
Yeah, I'm a deacon. Yeah. I was chairman of the trustees board for about 25 years. Yeah, and also I've been in the affiliated with the in the choir, I think, for years. I think I've got about 66 years in the choir.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a little bit more than I have.
Yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about the when you helped. Well, did you what part you played in raising money for the new chapel? And
well, you talking to the present chapel now?
Well, the new one in the 70s, I guess.
Yeah, that was in the 70s. Yeah, that's when we were. Then we had to sign what you call somewhat like your deeds too, but I mean more like it was a promissory note that you know we had to be responsible. About 5 of us had to be responsible for that, and you know, so we were responsible if the debt wasn't paid. They were looking forward to us, so that's one of the main roles that I played, and I was one of the signees.
And I have worked with the little choir for over 30 years. I have a little Sunday choir.
Yeah.
And still work with them. And I'm also in our mass choir. I've been there for over 60 years. I don't know where it's back.
I keep up with her because I remember she joined. I joined and she was in there about 2 years before I was. And I've been in there 66 years, so she has been there 68 years.
But it's been a long time.
But we have, we lose constantly. Remember, we have some, you know, an alchemy, I think, but some of the religious members of the English kids.
Oh, yeah, we were in the junior choir.
What do you call the junior choir when we were kids? I guess still saying, won't nobody fuss about being still being there.
You know what? That tape recorder is probably picking up the noise from the paper.
Y'all can change it, can't you? Or can you delete it?
It's okay.
Yeah.
I forget, but I don't take it back. I tease and laugh and tell the truth. I said, you did this high tech thing. I didn't have all that kind of stuff. So I don't do any of that taping or anything. I might say anything. My friend, I'm not going to say it because that's taping.
Well, tell us about the 50s and 60s and integration and what struggles you remember. Did you participate in anything or just watch it go by? Or
well, I didn't go to any marches or anything, but I just kept up with it on the TV and everything. But it was a struggle, but we didn't have too much conflict here in Marietta with riots and things, so most of that was out in the Alabama area, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I did know Dr. King, because I used to be an insurance agent, so I would go to Auburn Avenue, and that's where I met Dr. King and his brother, and it was very interesting. He was a very interesting person.
Can you tell us about your impressions of him, of meeting him?
Of Dr. King?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was just very nice and courteous, you know. And his brother was the same way. In fact, his brother worked with the insurance company that I worked with. Mm-hmm. And we were just normal people.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time when I knew him, he was the thing started this.
He was just another preacher?
Just another person at that time when I met him. And hadn't gotten famous then.
I didn't get a chance to meet Dr. King himself, but I met his father.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a chance because he did some church service, and I met him. And I also met his mama, too. I met his mom about 3 weeks before she was assassinated. And I'll never forget, because we had a program, and she was standing behind me, and I was looking at the program. She asked me, I'll never forget, she asked me, could she look at the program for a while? And about 3 weeks after then, she got assassinated.
Mm-hmm. Is there any, talking about Zion, is there anything that stands out in your mind since you've been attending Zion that has, how they've affected the community, how the community reacts to Zion? Because I know it's a big part of the community.
Oh, yes. Zion plays a big part in the community. We're a community church because we have a lot of activities going on, and then a lot of the children in the community comes in and they kind of interact with the church activities. And then we have the outreach service where they go from door to door, you know, and ask people, you know, if they know the Lord. We have a ministry that does that. And plus, you know, like, whatever benevolence for anything, like they need food or paying the bills, something like that. The church does that.
Well, yeah, we always have been a caring mm-hmm. church for people and help people. So, the community, so.
Well, have either of you, or what kind of, the word just went on my head, what kind of,
impact?
No. what kind of racism have you personally experienced, or what kind of discrimination?
I experienced. I didn't forget once when I was going into the drugstore at the time. You know, where you couldn't sit down at the counter and stuff like that. And I didn't go in there to sit down at the counter. I need some change for a dollar, something like that.
This was in a drugstore on the square?
Yeah, on the square. Mm-hmm. And one of the waitresses came up and told me, when I walked in there, she told me, you can't come in. You can't come in here, or something like that, she said. And I told her, all I wanted was to get a change for, I think it was a dollar, $5, whatever it was that I needed, a change like that. And she told me that, no, if you go back there and stand back in that corner there, then I'll wait on you. And, but I walked on out. I didn't do it. Because I always have looked at, like, even when coming up in a segregated area, I looked at human beings being human. And I guess one reason why, too, because, like you said, we reared up in although we all was poor, but we reared up in an integrated neighborhood. We played with, in fact, we didn't have nurseries and kindergarten and all that. So, my mother being there, my older sibling, well, they had to go to school. So people had to keep me. I stayed with different people. I got to go to school. And I stayed with white in the same neighborhood. And I played with them and they fed and all that. So we was used to it. You were used to it. I've always been used to them. And that was one incident that I recall that I guess it always be in my mind too.
Well, I had a experience with the housing authority, the mayor of the housing authority. A lady was working with them, and so I had carried insurance, so she knew that I knew something about keeping books. And so they, you know, how people do, she recommended me to work with. At that time, it was a segregated company. So they hired me to keep be the cashier bookkeeper. So I worked there about 2.5 years. So I had to take care of the Lyman homes that was over in Baptist Town, mm-hmm. and the Fort Hill home down there on Cole Street, right in that area. So I was taking care of those two offices. but they combined it all into one. So I had to shrink. I mean, I had to keep the records of the money that I was paid, collected. I had to do the send out all the bills, you know, for utilities and all that, and just keep up with everything. But then, you know, integration was getting into coming into beings. And so
about when was this?
This was in the 60s, early 60s, because I started in 60. I think I started there in 63. But anyway, because I quit in 66. But anyway, when they started this integration, they built the central office. See, the office, they had the office over here on Waldale Street for the white tenants. And they had an office over there in the Baptist Town for the black tenants, those segregated. So after they started, they built the central office down here by the post office, you know, the post office there, that little house that had a central office. And so at first, the lady that got me the job, she was the cashier first. So they built the John and Walker homes. And they didn't know they was going to have to integrate. So I was supposed to work under Mrs. Williams, and we was going to work from the John and Walker homes. Well, after I've been working about 6 months, and she died suddenly, you know, she had cancer. So then they decided to build this, like I said, build this central office. So one day, my administrator came over and told me that they was going to build this office, and that I could go out, you know, and look for a job, because they first started using IBM. So I said they would pay me to go look for a job. Okay, so I decided I went on with the interview. But then I didn't know that they were, just didn't want me there. But one of the cashiers, a white cashier came by the office where I was working. So she said, "Claire, where are you going when we move?" I said, "Well, nowhere." I said, "They haven't told me anything." I said, "Where are you going?" She said, "Well, I'm going to the central office." And they had me under the impression just going to be, you know, one cashier. I said, "Oh, really?" So it was three white cashiers. So they going to have them there, but I was supposed to go look for a job. So I spoke to Mr. Holmes, the man that ran down at the Haley Funeral Home, about it. And so he said, "Well, you know, they're supposed to have a black person there. They just can't do you like that." So he called him, the mayor, and I had a conference with the mayor. And he said, "Well, they got to have a black person there." And he called the administrator. So finally, they let me go to the central office. But they wouldn't let me. I couldn't do anything. They had the intercom. You know how you call from one room to the other. They wouldn't let me use the intercom. They wouldn't let me do nothing. I just had to fill out some application. I didn't do anything. Didn't collect no money. Didn't do nothing. They wouldn't let me do anything. It just sent me back. So one day, the administrator came into the little office where I was. He said, "Clara, I want you to go in the cage and tell them Denise to teach you the IBM machine." He said, "I don't want you to be a cashier." I said, "But you'll be a good stand-in, and I want you to learn it." Well, I went on in there. The girl had started showing me about the machine and everything, but it was another lady's office was adjacent to mine. She heard the conversation. And I just say that she buzzed the lady that was over the cashiers. Because in a little while, she came up the hall, and she said, "Denise, come in my office for a minute, please." So Denise went into her office. But when Denise got back, it was all a whole different ball game. So she looked in the drawers and found some old paint records from 1954. I never forget. And told me to go into the little office where I was working and separate those. But from then on, they never showed me anything, never took me in a cage or anything to teach me this machine. So I got to thinking. I said, "Now he wants me to learn this, and nobody would teach me." I said, well, they'll say if he's saying they're bad that she didn't try. So I went and talked to the administrator. So I asked him, did he have a special time that he wanted me to learn it? He said, no, but I want you to learn. I said, well, nobody would teach me. So he went in there and he told Denise, I want you to teach Clara this machine. Well, I guess that upset the boss of it. So I was sick with that's when the Asian flu was out. I got sick and I was off of work for about 2 weeks. When I got back to work, this lady, Miss Etikin, she came into the office. She said, Clara, Frank wants to see you in the conference room. That was our administrator's name. And I went in there. So he had a, just like we sitting here at the table, but it was much longer than this, the conference room. All the people were in there, the bosses that were over different offices were sitting around the table. And he sat there and told me that, I'm sorry to tell you, we don't have anything against your work, but we can't afford to keep you because the urban renewal is coming in and we need this, the blah, blah, that. And they already had my check made out, gave me 2 weeks pay and all of that, and let me go just like that. So I was shocked, and I don't know, it was a lady, you know, I had to say it was the act of God, because when you're shocked and confused, you don't know what to do, but the phone rang, and it was a white lady, and I used to work with the, the vote. I used to work with that. And so she told me to come to her house. She wanted to talk to me, right? Just that spur of the moment. And I'll never forget, she lived out there on South Cobb Drive. I don't even know how I found the lady's house, but I found it. And she was the first person I told about that. And so I came on home, and I just couldn't sleep, you know? Sometimes you just can't, you are shocked. Now I didn't go to sleep, so I just, right there in that living room, I got down and prayed, ask God, take that off of me. And I went on sleep and didn't worry me no more. But, some of the, a black guy went by there and said, why did you all let Clara go? And they told him that I couldn't do the work. Now I had kept the offices going for 2.5 years. They didn't have no problem with the money or nothing. But after they moved in this new office, they didn't want me down there. And so I realized that. So I called the meeting. I asked him, could I come and speak to them? And the Mrs. Woods, that was Professor Woods' wife, she went with me. So I asked him. I said, I just really want to know, why did you all let me go? After I had done the work for 2.5 years, kept up with the rent roll at that time, $5,000 was a lot of money. That was a lot of money to keep up with. So I said, I've kept this going for 2.5 years, and now I found out you say I couldn't do the work. And so he tried to do, well, it really wasn't Mr. Melson. It was so diehard that, because he was a young guy, he was 38 years old, and he saw what was happening, and he was trying to do the right thing. But I think they must have just got on him so hard until he gave in to them. And I told him to call Mrs. Intica in, too, so she could hear the conversation. Because I asked God, I said, now, if I did this work for 2.5 years, and couldn't do it, why did you keep me? You know? You don't keep somebody if they have your money and everything, and they can't, all of a sudden they can't do the work. So I told them I was going to have them investigate it, and I did. I went down on Peachtree Street in Atlanta, and a government agency went up there.
What agency was it?
It was I don't remember now, but it was in the Peachtree 7 building in Atlanta. And I went down there and I told him, the guy came up here. And he, you know, went through the records and all the work and everything. And he came, I had to go back to another meeting. And he said that, I don't find nothing wrong with your work. All the book, where everything was neat and everything. So every 3 months we had to send a record to Washington at that time. He said everything. He said, but if he's a fetish, didn't want you to say it. But I realized that. He said, but if you want your job back, you can have it. I told him I didn't want it back. Mm-hmm. And I said, but I would like for some black people to be there. And that's how they started having a black cashier. And Martha Blount is still working there. She's, we got over it, but that's just the way that was. But had I not gone and had them investigated, they would have gotten away with it.
Did you ever work with NAACP with that, or?
No, I just went to the peace streams. I went straight to the government with that, and I figured they could do more quicker than anything. So they did. After he found out that was nothing wrong with my work, he said, but they gave you, in fact, I had put in for Kenstone, and he checked that to see what my evaluation was. But he said, they gave you a good recommendation to Kenstone. Mm-hmm. So see, that defeated that purpose. Mm-hmm. And he knew that it was just that they didn't want any blacks there. But since then, they've had to hire blacks. So that it worked out good.
Did either of you ever have any dealing with the NAACP or any...
No more than being a member of it. No, not even
a position or anything like that.
No position, no.
I'm just curious, we went to the old Zion Chapel today. Does it look like when you were going there when you were younger? Did they do a good job in renovating it? Does it
represent? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Basically the same because I think the furniture, I know that they did refurnish the furniture, redundant.
We did it, but we still have the same benches.
We had the same bench in the old.
But when it was built.
The vice hanging down.
Mm-hmm. When it was built. That's some good furniture.
We were Baptist. You had a little pool back in it. Yeah. That's the thing. I guess you might have saw it back there.
Mm-hmm. Well, the bathroom's back there,
isn't it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's where we were baptized.
I was baptized there.
Yeah.
And we got married there. I had a wedding there.
She had a wedding. Yeah, she had a wedding there. I didn't have mine there because I married a lady in Dalton, Georgia. Dalton, Georgia. So mm-hmm. we were married up there.
What do you think that Zion is active in the community? Were they active in race relations and the community?
Oh, yes. It really was. We had a pastor by the name of Reverend J.W. Cook. Now, he was one that...
What was his name?
J.W. Cook.
Okay.
J.W. Cook. Now, he's the one that really got started all in this, in the beginning of integration, because he's the one that went down there and integrated with some more at the 10 cents, I think the restaurant downtown in Mayretta.
Yeah.
He went in there and they had this minister of lines, one nothing but white.
He was a mess.
He was serious enough that they wanted to help and get rid of him. They said he's causing a lot of problems, you know, as the people that not the church people. But, he's the one that really started. But I never forget, he said, well, you might as well get prepared for it because it's coming.
Yeah.
That's what he said. I never forget. He was really
So Zion strong. Was pretty active in the community and regulations.
Right.
Y'all just didn't participate.
No, we didn't participate that. But we'd always been active. But like I said, all in all, the relationship in May Reynolds and Cobb County have been pretty good. Growing up. But like I said, you're just segregated, I think. But
Reverend Cook integrated this whitewashed area because we used to go to the white. He just went in there one day and started washing.
He was kind of old.
There's another way to it.
When it's there, when it's cold.
But in this area, I kind of changed the subject a little bit. I kind of think about when I was growing up. In this particular area, I remember they had the prison camp was on right down the street down there.
Yeah, Fairground.
But they had the prison.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's down there, almost the end where you go up that little, right, like you're on the Lockheed. It's on the right. I never forget.
It's where Mayretta Journal is, down
in. Oh, really?
It might be where Mayretta Journal
is. Yeah, it's where Mayretta
Journal
is.
Yeah, they used to.
When there used to be the... big airplane across the street where the pool is, right?
What about that?
They used to have a big airplane where sitting about where the pool in Bell Park, right?
Yeah,
Right over in there?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, it was right there. That's where the camp was, right there.
Yeah.
Well, when do you recall, or at what age, or did something happen to make you realize that segregation was wrong or weird, or when did it stop being just...
Well, we knew it was wrong, but we at that time, the movement hadn't started, so well, nothing we could do. So, you know, you grow up in something, you just accept it. But we didn't like it.
I have always, my firm belief that people are people. Mm-hmm. Color don't make up. What you think in the heart, mm-hmm. you see. And if your heart don't change, you don't change.
That's
right. And your mind might change, mm-hmm. but you got to change that heart. If that heart don't change,
legislation don't change the heart. And mm-hmm. if you got to want to.
Yeah.
They ain't go by the law, but... Mm-hmm. It's just safer.
So you think Zion is still involved?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Very much so.
In race relations in the community?
Yeah, good. And Reverend Johnson was there.
Yeah, he was there, because he was there before Reverend Travis. I guess Reverend Travis probably told you that he was there about 31 years. Mm-hmm. Reverend Johnson was. As long as I've been a member of Zion, I don't recall but five precious. Because mm-hmm. Reverend Johnson stayed there 31 years. Reverend Belcher was the first one I remember. And then Reverend Belcher, then Reverend Edwards, and then Reverend Cook, and Reverend Johnson, and Reverend Travis.
Mm-hmm. That's the only one I remember, too. Because they stayed a long time.
They stayed a long time.
But they were good leaders.
Good leaders, yeah. She was.
Yeah, Reverend Johnson and the lady at Kennesaw State.
She
retired.
Betty Siegel?
Yeah, they were real good friends. And they, because Kennesaw State used to come to our church once a year mm-hmm. and for service. Mm-hmm. And she would always come and make a talk. She and Reverend Johnson were, that was years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
About over 20 years, mm-hmm. I know, that they got that started with them. Communication with the Kennesaw College and Zion Church.
Well, what kind of church activities do you remember from when you were little kids?
Oh, just like Sunday school, mm-hmm. Vacation Bible School, and BYPU. We had three services.
Yeah. What's BYPU?
Baptist Training Union for the youth, BYPU. And they had two services. One at 11 o'clock and one at 7 at night. We had a night service,
You used to have a night service. Yeah, one about probably 7 o'clock, I think it was.
Because BYPU was at 6.
Yeah.
Sure, they didn't church hotels.
Yeah. And if you went on a play, you know you better be back there, BYPU.
You had to go to BYPU.
You're in trouble if you're not.
You already had Sunday school, but you went right back to some old teacher.
I wish we had that, all that today at times, but I think she would be much better, I believe, than what a lot of them would be.
It sounds like Zion's doing a lot for the community and has lots of services, and sounds mm-hmm. like there's something for everybody.
They have a lot of ministry going on. They're doing a good job with the youth, I think. Very good job. Every time you look, they got another ministry for them, and that's really nice. We need it. Because now they have one for the young guys, and they have one special for the young girls. The mothers, they got that started here recently. So they talk to the young girls, about life and everything. So I think that's really nice.
Well, so you work for the housing authority and in insurance?
Yeah, I worked for the house, and then I worked at Kennesaw for 32 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I worked at Kennesaw for 30. After I left the housing authority, I went to the Kennesaw. Mm-hmm. And I've been retired 10 years.
Mm-hmm. What did you do at Kennesaw?
What did I do? Mm-hmm. I was a nurse tech. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what about your husband and your family?
Well, I didn't have any children when my husband's passed. He's mm-hmm. deceased.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been gone 4 years now. And he worked he used to work at Slater at the plant down there before they closed, and then he went to the Presbyterian Church.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he retired from in Marietta Presbyterian
Church. How'd you
meet him? Well, he was in service, and he came, his
Oh, so you waved at him on the train?
No, I didn't see him on the train. But he was in service, and his nephew had married a girl, because I used to live over there near the swimming pool up there now. And his nephew had married a girl up there, and I knew her. Well, we were just neighbors. And he would come and visit them. And after he got out of service, he came here and was staying with them. Mm-hmm. And he said her mother told him he ought to try to date me, that I was a nice girl or something. But anyway, how he really, had a car, and I wasn't married at that time, but my girlfriend, I had a flat tire. And I had called my girlfriend to tell her husband, because we all grew up together, we'd come and change the tire for me. And so she told me, she said, yeah, you be over there. So my husband's name's Long Dev, I learned to call him Johnny. Well, he knocked on my door, and he said, what you gonna do, let this car stay flat all day? I said, well, somebody's coming over and fix it in a little while. And then he said, do you mind if I fix it? I said, no, you fix it, you ought to. So after he fixed the tire, he said, he had been watching me, and I didn't know that. He said, well, what you doing this evening? So I was going to a shower. I said, I'm going to a shower, a bridal shower, later on. He said, what you going to do after that? I said, oh, nothing. He said, you want to go to a movie? So we started going to the movie, and from then on, we started going together. And later on, we got married, and we were together about 2.5 years, and we got married.
What year did you get married?
63.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think is your fondest memory of Zion?
Growing up, listening to those people sing those hymns, mm-hmm. and didn't have no music, stomping on that foot.
Dedicated our musician was. Mm-hmm. Her name was Miss tell her right. She taught us a lot of songs and things, like you said, and then listen to the old hymns and things and observe it. And I used to watch those older deacons when I was little, you know. I thought that I'd be up there doing it one day myself. Yeah, I find out I'm up there doing it now, you know. Yeah.
And I love to hear that bell ring on Sunday morning. You could hear the bell all over town. At 11 o'clock, it would be ringing, and these ladies, people used to walk everywhere, but they could walk in them highest shoes. They had some strong legs. Oh, they'd be stepping in the church with those highest shoes on at 11 o'clock. And the little man, I can't remember, but the bell was so heavy. Mm-hmm. And then when he would pull the rope, it looked like he was just going to go up in the seat. It was so much fun, though, yeah. I tell you the truth.
And one of my former members, he was talking about one of the musicians, she played for what she called the senior choir. Her name was Miss Nova
Sumner.
And our kids would be, we were little kids then. At the end of every song, she had to hit that last key of bing.
When she got through with it, she said,
"Bing." We were just falling. That would tickle us no more. We had a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
And she always would hit that end of that key. We just, it just tickled.
That was the end of the song.
That's the end of it. Yeah.
Is there anything that you guys want to add that we didn't ask you about, you want to tell us about?
Anything that you think needs to be on tape for future generations to hear about Marietta or your life or Zion or integration or segregation or?
Well, I don't know. They may get a kick out of us running to that train station. You didn't tell them about my girl. I mean, it was dull. I guess it'd be dull to them, but we made a pact that we would never tell anybody about going to that train station. For Florine and I, every Sunday we would go to town because that train was coming, and we were so desperate to see some boys. So when that train started blowing, we would beat the train. I guess it'd be up there by Elizabeth, but we would beat the train to the station, done, and then we were so glad to see those soldiers. They waved back at us and smiled. But that was our highlight.
You probably made
it back. It did. Until the freight train came along.
I tell you what we used to do, too, on Sunday, too. They had the streetcars here and there. And, you know, they go down the square there. Then you go to Atlanta. Took you hours to get to Atlanta.
Sure did.
Took you hours to get to Atlanta. And it would be thrilling. We slip off. You go to Atlanta. We just had a thrill of watching the big old tall building. We didn't see no tall building in Mayweather. We'd go down and walk around and see the tall building, like I said, but we had to get that spin. Be back that fool.
And the thing, we did experience segregation on the streetcar, because, you know, we had to go to Atlanta. Okay, if it filled up, you didn't have but one seat for blacks to sit. It was in the back. Mm-hmm. But if it filled up, you had to stand up all the way to Atlanta. You could stand up all the way coming back home. Because I know during the years I was carrying insurance, I had to stand because they would start filling up, the whites would start filling up from the back. Mm-hmm. If you came on that, then you had to stand up. However way the old streetcar would rough bus or anything, you had to stand up and hold.
And it was
keep from falling.
And I went to school in Atlanta for a while, and a lot of times, like you said, at the bus station, you took off the bus. And like she said, if they got filled up, either you had to stand up, you don't let so many stand up. And then, I don't care how long you had been waiting there for that bus, then you had to wait till the next bus come along.
There's something that
you had to wait till the next bus to catch the next bus. Now, you might have been waiting on that bus 45 minutes to an hour.
Where did you go to school?
I went to school down on a business college. Mm-hmm. Reed Business College, where I went to school that time in Atlanta. Plenty of times we had to fill up, we had to stand and wait on the next bus.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be another hour or two for you wait.
Long time to get home.
Oh yeah, you'd be so tired. You'd be so tired. Yeah, but you just had to stand up if you wanted to get home.
And I just think that I won't take anything for the experience.
Though. I wouldn't either.
Good experience, you know, and these kids need to learn that this day and time. That's a lesson they had to learn that and so on. They take so much for granted, and all this have been like that. But they take so much for granted. And the kids kind of get next to, I guess, some of our older people, because we know how we come up and sacrifice you had to make to do those things, you see. And they take so much for granted.
But through it all, we made it. We were happy. I mean, I never have held anything in my heart against anybody because that was the way the life was in those days.
And I could say that we had a good father. Because our father, he was a father and a mother too. Because we were six of us, and he didn't marry no more. He helped raise with our relatives. And the neighbors, he raised six kids there, and all of them, I think, turned out to be pretty good. They had no really bad reputation or anything.
And I remember the first time my dad took me to see my grandmother. She was sick, and I looked on her chest, and I saw this raised place on her chest, and I didn't know what it was. So I asked him, I said, what is that? And someone, I think my aunt said, well, that's where, when she was a little girl, she was branded.
Your grandmother was a slave?
Uh-huh. She was a slave child and taken away from her mother. Well, during that time, I was a teenager being there. I did get hot over there, you know. And when they would write the Puzzle of the Public, people would be writing different things about blacks, and I would answer it, and I'd write back. But then something told me one day, they said, no, don't build up that anger because that was in her generation, in Ed Stone. And those people had to pay for that. And so I stopped. I stopped being angry, and I can get along with anybody. And I don't care what they say now. They can talk about Obama, whatever bothered me, because I got over that. And I'm glad I did, you know. Because if you don't get it, when you hold anger, now, it really did upset me. I'm not going to say it didn't. And for years I would answer, talk back and all like that. But that's not necessary. You can get over stuff. If you practice and you pray about it, you will. So it doesn't bother me. People can say anything they want to. I know I'm not that, so I don't worry about it.
I think that'd be a good way to wind it up.
Yeah, sounds good.